Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 111. 11-1, dude. We're up to 11-1.
What a thrilling week.
Yes.
For Sharks hockey.
Yes, it's very good.
We've got a ton of news to talk about, dude.
We do.
As we discussed earlier today when we were attempting to come up with topics for this podcast, I think one idea that was kicked around was exploring Ken Huskin's dental hygiene habits.
Yes, that would be riveting.
Maybe looking into, Thomas Greiss, whether he prefers to have schnitzel or to have some sort of sausage.
Right. Yeah, bratwurst, perhaps.
And we could also talk about the Giants. The San Francisco Giants totally failing.
Yeah. Well,
so these are the hot topics.
Actually, dude, I do want to. I have some NHL news, and that is I made a new ringtone for you.
You did?
So when you call me, it now plays this.
Nice.
Can you identify it?
That's the NHL Tonight song.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. The defunct NHL Tonight theme song.
Yes. It was a great show on ESPN. I'm sorry. I can't remember what exactly went off the air, but it was...
Well, I think it's gone because ESPN no longer has NHL coverage.
Yeah, but it was off ESPN long before they stopped covering hockey.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It was like 2002.
I still long for the day. I hope that when the deal's up with Versus that somehow the NHL can go back to ESPN. But would ESPN even want it at this point with the NBA thriving? And now their extensive coverage of the Premier Soccer League.
That's true. That's true. So we have that. And
dude, there is some news, dude. And there's some things that are around the periphery of Sharks-related stuff. Thomas Cabrelle not traded this week by the deadline.
The news is there's no news.
The deadline was over the weekend, and Cabrelle... after months of speculation and the ability to trade him to anybody they so chose to trade him to, they didn't do it.
Yeah,
they didn't. So what happened here, dude?
Well, I guess Brian Burke was thinking he was going to get some blockbuster mega deal, and he just didn't get it. The rumor was the Sharks were in on it. I heard Derek Jocelyn in a first-round pick.
And that's a hilarious price for an all-star blue liner.
Well, first-round picks are hard to come by these days. You
but
don't see
but a Sharks first-round pick is a number 27 through 30 pick.
Yeah.
Most likely.
That's true.
So
maybe Burke listened to our podcast when we said we didn't think Derek Jocelyn was really ever going to be much of an NHL player.
But, like, and they need more D?
That's true,
dude,
too.
Dude, let me tell you who's signed for them right now, okay? They've got Phaneuf for 4 more years.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got Komisarek for 4 more years.
Right.
1 more year of Cabrelle. 2 more years of Boschman, 2 more years of Finger. All those guys make over $3.5 million, by the way.
Wow.
All right. Luke Shen.
Yeah.
Luke Shen. The end of his entry level deal. And then they did sign Brett Lebda.
That's right.
To almost a $1.45 million deal this offseason. And he got 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years. Okay, that's we're at 7D now, and then they've got Gunnarsson, who's a young player who they liked last year. So they've got 8D. So what?
Why would they trade him?
Well, what did Burke think was going to happen here? Like, they're in this spot, much like Vancouver's in, where they're in a worse spot than Vancouver, because Vancouver, with Salo out with whatever his injury du jour is, from playing broom hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto's
in
trouble. $2 million of cap space, 8D, 7 of them expensive.
Right. They're going to have to...
They're going to have to move somebody.
Move somebody to the minors or something, or they're going to have to move somebody they don't want to move.
Well, they have... I mean, Jeff Fager's unmovable.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cabrelle's really... I mean, if you trade Cabrelle, who's going to run the power play?
Well, you can't trade Cabrelle now because he's got a no trade.
But if they did trade him, who's running that power play? Brett Lebda?
Yeah.
I guess he is.
And that's got to be Phaneuf. I mean, Phaneuf had offensive instincts early on in his career in Calgary.
But you've just got such limited
options.
Potential for offense.
And the fact is they have like no offense.
Right.
That's the other reason why not trading Cavalier.
What are you talking about, dude? They signed Colby Armstrong.
Whoa, I stand corrected.
Why is Brian Burke considered to still be an elite GM? Because I know it's early in the rebuilding process, but you look at the moves he's made so far. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Colby Armstrong, he gave $3 million to Colby Armstrong. He was so good last year, 15 goals.
Yeah. Give him $3
million. $3
million. Yeah.
I think they signed him on the first day of free agency, if I remember right.
Yeah. See, I used to be a fan of Colby Armstrong. I'm not off the Colby Armstrong bandwagon quite yet.
29 points last year.
Yeah, okay. That's not good. It's not good.
No, I mean, not $3 million good. Not what they're putting him in a position to be a top six forward on their team.
What do you think Burke should have done with Caberle? Like, what should he have been in for? Like, what do you think he should have looked for given what he probably could have gotten? I mean, of course, you say, okay, I want Malkin in a first, but you're not going to get that. So,
well, he was, the price he set all along was a top six forward with hopefully some scoring ability.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he wanted. And he wanted, I mean, originally it was top six forward prospect and a pick, right?
Right, yeah.
Then it kind of went back to top six forward and a pick. And Doug Wilson's rumored counter was a, you know, almost off the bottom of the list depth AHL defenseman and a first round pick.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, Jocelyn's not a depth AHL defenseman. He's a good AHL defenseman,
sure,
but he's not an NHL defenseman.
No, but he's probably on the Sharks depth chart. He's probably 9 or 10.
Right, right.
So it's not... he was offering nothing. I mean, he basically...
Yeah. Well, first round pick.
I mean, sure. I don't know. I mean, that's not... When it's in the 27 to 30 range, you know, if you can get a second rounder that's in the 30 to 40 range, then, you know, you're basically getting similar player.
Well, the fact of the matter is now they're basically going to get almost nothing for Caberle because he's in the last year of his deal. If they do trade him near the deadline to a team that he agrees to, they're not going to get a whole lot because he's not going to give him, you know, a list of 30 teams. What I think Burke should have done is he should have traded him for a first round pick and maybe a prospect. You know, maybe not Jocelyn, but a forward prospect. Like, if I was Brian Burke, I would have taken... well, considering they have low picks, but maybe I would have considered taking like a first, a second, and Ben Ferriero for Caberle. Like, I would have considered that.
I never would have given that, though.
But, I mean, that's the kind of thing I think he should have taken. I don't understand. It's like, I want a top six offensive scorer right now in the league. It's like, what exactly is that going to get you? The ninth seed?
Right.
It's like,
no,
what is the point?
I mean, they're so far from the playoffs. This team is not anywhere close. The team that I... guess kind of expected to maybe be in the mix a little bit more. I mean, we've been talking about how a team like Columbus needs mm-hmm. this type of player so desperately.
They do.
And, you know, if you're Columbus, do you know, they've got young players to offer. It just seems odd that no connection was made here, but I think it's funny and I'm happy.
Yeah,
listen,
right.
Screw you, Brian Burke.
it's just good times. It's
just
good.
They're going to have to make a move somewhere, you know. I still think, you know, one of these guys has to go. And, you know, probably the most marketable guy is Luke Shen. I mean, do they dare trade Luke Shen?
No, you cannot. He's the only untouchable in that group, in my opinion. I mean, if you can only keep two guys, you keep Phaneuf and Shen, and that's it. And everybody else, you get it.
Let me toss something out totally random.
Okay.
What about Luke Shen plus for Bobby Ryan? If you're the Ducks, do you do it?
If you're the Ducks, you do it because they have no D. Yeah, you have to. I think you definitely do it if you're the Ducks.
So maybe that's a deal that we shouldn't discount at some point. That's not a bad partnership.
No, it's really not. You're right. Because Bob Murray decided to completely dismantle his defense for reasons unknown.
I love that, too.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, speaking of another, you mentioned Vancouver a moment ago. Well, you know, you mentioned they have a bunch of D. Sammy Salo's out, but they have a lot of defense. And so the question is... you know, which one of these guys might get moved? They signed, for those of you...
Brad Lukowich.
We already traded him, Brad Lukowich. We can't trade him again. But they signed Dan Hamhuis in the offseason.
Right.
He was sort of the big defenseman who signed a big contract. They got Keith Ballard as well. Now they have Bieksa. I'm looking at their depth chart. Sammy Salo, Alex Edler, and Christian Ehrhoff. That, right now, that would sort of be their top six. Do we know if Salo is going to definitely...
Salo is out. He has an Achilles injury.
Mm-hmm.
So I read today he's out most likely until January.
Oh, okay.
So, but that is, that cap room will be temporarily available. So
that's right.
Could they keep BX in the short term?
They could. That mm-hmm. that means their sixth defenseman would be Shane O'Brien.
Right. And they kept him. I mean, I think they re-signed him in the offseason.
I think so. And they but that means they still have Andrew Alberts and Aaron Rome.
Right.
Those neither
crowded
those,
house.
Yeah, it's a crowded house. A lot of guys. And so the question is, do you trade Bieksa and suffer for a few months with Andrew Alberts as your number six in order to get Sammy Salah back in January? You know, and that still means Aaron Rome is sitting on the bench making $750,000. I'm sure that's a one-way deal. So the question is for us is we've talked about Bieksa. I can't imagine, given this, you know, stupefying depth at D, that Vancouver's going to go out and re-sign Willie Mitchell. Although that...
That's still floating around,
That's still
too.
Floating I mean, around.
One of the four teams he's linked to is
it makes
still
no
Vancouver.
I have no idea why they would re-sign
unless, I mean, unless they're able to get rid of some of their... trim some of their fat there.
They'd have to trade some guys. They'd have to trade at least one guy. They'd have to trade...
At least.
They'd have to trade...
More than that.
Probably Bieksa and one other guy.
Right.
Maybe get rid of Shane O'Brien if they can. So the question for us today, one of the questions for us today, is what do you think the price would be for Kevin Bieksa? Here's a stat. Last season, he suffered another skate cut. I think he suffered three skate cuts to his leg in his NHL career. Last one actually severed tendon in his ankle.
This guy's skating on his knees? What's going on here?
Well, he's in the dirty places, I guess.
Yes.
55 games, 3 goals, 22 assists, made $3.75 million. He's had two seasons over 40 points, so the guy definitely has some potential to put some points on the board as a defenseman. That's a pretty good number. So the question for you, dude, and I guess for me as well, if the Sharks do want to go get Kevin Bieksa and pay him $3.75 million this year, what do you think they could trade to get him?
Well, I guess I'll answer the first question. The second part of the discussion I want to have is, do we even want this guy?
Right.
All right.
Right.
So the price, well, if Doug Wilson's willing to offer Jocelyn and a first for Thomas Cabralet,
allegedly,
and you got to figure that the price of what he's willing to give for Kevin Bieksa is lower than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, because...
I have Jocelyn in a first with a question mark here. Because, I mean, Jocelyn in a first, as you said, is not much of an offer for Thomas Cabralet, because you're talking a late 20s pick and a guy who's probably not going to make a much of an NHL impact.
I think that this would be a similar situation where Doug Wilson would say, okay, I'm going to give you no picks here,
right,
but two prospects.
Okay.
But you got to take Ken Huskins.
Right.
And they'll say, well, we don't have the cap room to do that. And he'll say, well, too bad. You better figure that out. You know, you'll have the cap relief for 4 months and then you waive Ken Huskins. I don't care. It's the same thing that you had to do to Brad Lukowich. My price that I came up with, the Huskins, Jocelyn, and, you know, maybe the bitter pill to swallow is an unknown player like Steven Zaleski.
Right.
You know, you give him. I mean, is he going to be able to contribute, or is he Ryan Vesci? I mean,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You got to think that maybe Ben Ferriero, you like his chances a little bit more than Zaleski, and Cam MacIntyre is apparently over him in the depth chart too. What do you got?
I have Ferriero, Huskins in a third, which may be a little bit. That's a pretty hefty package, but I think that's what it would take. Sort of something in that range in order to land them, because with Salo being hurt, they don't have to trade Bieksa, and that means there are going to be running Shane O'Brien and Andrew Alberts as their 5 and 6, and that's, you know, that's not super exciting. That's not really any more exciting than Nicholas Vahlin and Ken Huskins as your 5 and 6. So to me, Ferriero, Huskins in a third would be what it would take to get him. And that sort of leads us to your second question, is that the kind of thing that we should want to be giving up in order to get Kevin Bieksa?
Yeah, I don't mind the price. I mean, like, I don't see...
Right.
You know, I think we still have to look at the Sharks' window of opportunity, you know, that, you know, Dale Tallon... opened the window by making some really, you know, win now decisions in Chicago, and Stan Bowman has opened it even wider. You know, the Blackhawks will most likely regress, and the deal really might be is, you know, does Vancouver want to trade Bieksa to probably their biggest competition in the Western Conference?
Right.
And I would say probably not.
Yeah.
Why do you want to make the Sharks better? If that makes them better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dude, I'm not usually much for this GVT stuff.
Yeah.
But I did take a look today.
Sure.
And BX's total GVT for last year, the regular season,
it was
3.5.
Yeah, it's not very good.
Vlasic's 4.5. Mm-hmm. Boyle, 12.7,
right,
to give you an idea
of the scale.
But Boyle's
mostly because of offense. So do you have offense and defensive numbers for BX or just overall?
I do have that, dude. I can
find I remember looking at this number a while back. I'm not sure if my memory is good, but I thought his defensive number was particularly bad, BX's was, which is kind of an anomaly for his career. So I wonder if that's something sort of because of his injury, but I was wondering if you had that number.
BX's number defensively was 1.2. Was not good last year. You know, and to put it in perspective from a Sharks point of view, Jay Leach was 1.1.
Yeah.
And Jason Demers, who defensively last year was not solid, was 1.7.
Right.
So
BX really had an off year.
So if we're asking this player to step in and replace Rob Blake, who was a 4.5, mm-hmm. that's just not in the ballpark.
Right.
That's not close. So would BX replace Blake's presence on the power play and his playmaking ability? Yes. Is he going to help out defensively or be a liability? It sounds like he's going to be a liability.
Well, I think last year, given his injury and stuff, I don't know. I think his last year may be a little bit more of an anomaly. So I remember looking at his 2008-2009 numbers, and they were much, much better. So, and he had 45 points that year. That was one of his better years in the league. So I think it's going to be sort of somewhere in between. So will he be able to, you know, be the best defensive defenseman on the Sharks?
He probably
won't be as good as Vlasic, but I don't think he's going to be a Jay Leach type of defensive liability.
No. But you know, what are we looking for? You know, Doug Wilson, by the Hjalmarsson signing, is looking for a shutdown guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that guy.
No.
This is I don't know if this is a compliment.
A physical defenseman who can do a little bit of everything.
This is a younger version of Sheldon Surrey.
Yeah.
Fair?
Yeah, I think that's
all
fair.
All right, maybe better than Surrey now.
Right.
You know, not as good as Surrey when he was in his prime.
That's right.
Okay.
I think that's a pretty fair estimation.
So, you know, I don't know, dude. I'm on the fence. I don't think this is a good match from Vancouver's point of view. I don't think they want BX anywhere near the Pacific Division where he could come back to harm him. I'm giving it 20% chance of happening.
All right.
And that might even be a little high.
Well, dude, one thing you gave 50% chance was Willie Mitchell, still out there, worked out with the Caps this week. Not a lot of news Willie Mitchell-wise. Are you sticking with the 50%, dude?
Yeah, really? I am. Yeah, I am.
You think Willie Mitchell's the answer?
No. I don't. a healthy Willie Mitchell,
yeah.
I think we'd both be really excited about that.
Yes.
I'm just not confident
at
the concussions that really, really is concerning to me. You know, a guy who plays the physical style that he does, is he going to be, you know, one hit away from being out again for the rest of the year?
Yeah.
And
that could very well happen. I mean, look at a huge guy like Eric Lindros. I mean, probably concussions were understood a lot less, you know, only that was what, 10 years ago. But still, how big and strong a guy is or how great of a player he is doesn't really tell you anything about how on the edge he is or on the brink of suffering a really bad concussion that could set him back a whole year or maybe a whole career. So, and that's just something you can't measure in any player right now. And the fact that Willie Mitchell missed half the season, man, I just don't like that matchup. That's just too much risk for my blood.
I think it's worth the risk at the right price. And I think that's where, you know, it's going to get a little sticky here.
Mm-hmm.
There is a confirmed report that he was in Washington.
He
met with the Capitals. He took a tour of their facility. He went on the record as saying, you know, very nice. And the agent said, we're not in any rush to make a decision here.
Mm-hmm.
It was in that same article sort of presumed that he's made the same trip to San Jose. It just wasn't documented. No one spotted Willie Mitchell at the airport. Would you recognize Willie Mitchell, who was sitting right next to you, dude?
Doubtful.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And evidently he visited with the Kings, which that matchup doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't really understand why they'd be that interested in him. But I think it's going to come down to the Sharks and the Caps, and I think the Caps need him more.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they'll probably be willing to pay a little bit more.
I think you're right.
But it does concern me. I mean, we still have a giant empty gaping void in our blue line.
It's true.
And I don't like it, dude.
No, not happy.
No, no bueno.
Speaking of a place where we don't have a void, EJ Raddick reportedly said that Antti Niemi, the Chicago goaltender that was not retained, awarded $2.75 million in arbitration. Chicago chose to walk away. EJ Raddick is stating that that San Jose makes the most sense for Niemi. Is that the quote, or is that the wording he used? I think, you know, we might try to get EJ back on the show. As loyal listeners know, we've had EJ Raddick on this show several times. We usually try and contact him when we have something specific to talk about. This sounds like something specific to me. I would like to talk to EJ about this because I don't agree with that statement. We mentioned this last week, so I don't want to rehash the whole argument again.
Right.
But does he mention any reasoning about that, dude? Or is there... I mean, sure, we don't... The Sharks don't have an obvious number one awesome goaltender like Vancouver has with Roberto Luongo. But that seems to me like it was on purpose. Otherwise, they could have gone out and gotten somebody. We look at the names of guys that are still unsigned. I mean, they could have re-signed to Barkov.
Right. And this is what EJ wrote. He said, despite comments to the contrary from Sharks GM Doug Wilson, I think Niemi's most logical NHL landing spot is the San Jose Sharks. After that, there just aren't too many crease openings. So
logical. That word logical. I just don't understand how that's
but
logical.
The other part of the sentence is that he's implying that there's a crease opening in San Jose. So
right.
Nitti Mocky wasn't the answer. What was Nitti Mocky never intended to be the answer? Were they willing to go like Nabokov's price, which would have been $5.5 million likely, and to put Niemi at 3.5 and Nitti Mocky at 2, and you've got two goalies that are making 5.5 combined? Is that the answer?
I don't see how it is, considering, you know, there's a lot of backup goaltenders making not a lot of money, Greiss being one of them, Brian Boucher a couple years ago being another,
right,
that did perfectly fine as the backup. Why would we need a $2 million backup?
Yeah, we don't.
I just don't
get
that.
It doesn't make sense unless, you know, this was a move that Doug Wilson just didn't anticipate having the option to make.
Right.
So you've got Niemi in front of you. You have him rated higher than any goalie that's in your system, let's say. Now, maybe they don't.
I think that's pretty likely.
But, you know, he's rated higher than any goalie on the board. You're willing to go the 4 years with him. Do you not do it because you made the Nitti Mocky signing and that's going to hold you back? I mean, payroll-wise, if they can find someone to take Torrey Mitchell, they could feasibly do it. It's just... then you're in the same spot again where you've committed that much salary combined to a goalie.
That you don't... I mean, let's be honest. He won a Stanley Cup on a great, great Chicago team with a lot of defensive help. I like Antti Niemi. I think he's a good goaltender. But he's not Ryan Miller. He's not the guy that you're sure this guy's going to be an awesome goaltender for the rest of his career. This is a guy that they played because their number one goaltender was so bad they couldn't keep him in there. It's not like he really won the job exactly.
Right.
I mean, he won it almost by default because Cristobal Huet was not good. So,
dude, still is not good.
Yeah, still.
He still is not good.
Dude, let's get to the email. We got an email from Eric. Said, dudes, listening to last week's podcast, you guys mentioned how Detroit doesn't have a traditional checking line, which got me thinking, do the Sharks have a traditional checking line this year? I'm excited to see what Logan can do this season, assuming he's the third line center, and I'm expecting some substantial growth. But I've not seen much in his game that makes me think that he is the guy you want going up against a top-tier scoring line. He doesn't seem to have enough of an edge to serve in this role. It's more likely the Sharks just roll three lines and then have the energy brash line of Nickel, Mayers, and fill in the blank. So what do you think about that, dude? Do the Sharks have a traditional checking line?
I want to comment on Logan Couture's like toughness.
Yeah.
I mean, he's gritty like Justin Bieber. You know what I mean?
Like, that gritty.
He's got that kind of grit going. He's got like Jonas Brothers grit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, the Sharks don't have a traditional checking line. Not the way this current roster is built. I mean, you know, is it Eric? Eric kind of tossed out a third line of McGinn, Couture, which I like that
yeah.
combo. And then Torrey Mitchell, I mean, that's a pretty undersized,
yeah.
kind of soft, well, McGinn's not soft, but, you know, kind of not too physical, not outstanding defensively third line. So, you know, if Wilson's going in the Detroit model, you know, he kind of likes how that goes. But we don't have that Chris Draper. We don't have
no.
that rat from last summer, Boland. What do you think, dude? I mean, how do you kind of see the bottom six shaping up here?
I think mostly, as Eric put it, I mean, McGinn, Couture, and Mitchell, and then Mayer's nickel, and maybe Cam McIntyre, maybe, you know, somebody else.
Don't you think they're going to throw McIntyre or Mayer's on that third line with McGinn and Couture? If you were the
yeah.
coach, doesn't that make more sense?
Yeah, I could see it either way. It's just sort of a question of where you see the chemistry with Mitchell. I mean, Mitchell has good speed, Nickel has good speed, and Mayer's has good speed. So it's not like you need to put Mitchell on the fourth line because you need the speed aspect there.
Right.
But you're right, it's a little undersized. You know, I'm always a little fuzzy on these definitions. Is a checking line like... Sometimes I think of a checking line as like, oh, it's Jody Shelley and, you know, it's like the energy line. I mean, is a checking line the energy line? Or are we always thinking of the checking line is the shutdown line like the Ducks had with
yeah,
Rob Niedermeyer?
That's what I... Yes.
That's what you're thinking
yes,
of.
That's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of a third line, checking line, shutdown line. The Niedermeyer, Moen, Paulson line.
Right.
That's the quintessential checking line for me. They were so good.
It used to be checking line was meant to mean the three big bruisers you have on the fourth line to go out and beat the crap out of people.
Well, I think in today's NHL, that is the useless line.
Right.
Because that line doesn't fully exist.
That's the Riley Cote line.
In the current NHL, you know, you look at, you know, our fourth line, if you're on the fourth line for the Sharks, you're going to play 6 to 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's about it. And if you don't have the penalty killing skills of a Scott Nickel, or now of a Jamal Mayer's, you'll play even less. You'll play
right.
2 minutes or 3 minutes. You know, hello, Jed Ortmeier. So,
yeah.
I don't think
the Sharks have a real checking line. I mean, they have some energy players. They lost Manny Malhotra. I mean, Manny Malhotra is the best player the Sharks have had in the last
So, does that irritate you? Or are you okay with it?
I'm okay with it because as long as you have enough skill out there, I mean, the Detroit model that works for them is they put a lot of skill out there.
So, are the Sharks good enough on the forward end defensively, or are they still suspect?
Well, considering Mayer's has some PK time, Nichols plays PK, you know, Mitchell back before all of his injuries was a PK guy. I'm not, and we've seen McGinn with a little bit of that. He's not just a guy that hangs out at the far blue line waiting for the pass.
Right.
I'm not disappointed in the defensive ability of our bottom six. Not in the least bit. That's not to say that they're the shutdown line. You could, okay, McGinn, go out and take out Rick Nash and just, you know, hang on him all game and everything will be fine.
We're still missing that one player, the, you know, Dave Bolin type that those guys are hard to find.
We don't have that guy. But
well,
a lot of teams don't have that guy.
Andrew Desjardins?
Right.
It could be that guy.
Right.
That's the guy. I can't wait to see him in preseason. I'm really interested to see. Yeah. Is he going to get a real chance to make this team, dude?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm very eager to see how he fares because we heard the announcer from Eric Lindquist from the AHL Worcester Sharks. You heard him really talk him up big time. So, you know, this guy could really make an impact right away. I'm interested to seeing him. So
you know, there's a Lady Gaga concert going on down the street from my house.
Really cool.
Yeah. You want to go?
No.
Oh.
It's a good question, though.
Then why are you dressed in a Lady Gaga half top?
This is how I dress.
Okay. All right. Okay.
It's warm in here, dude.
I know it is. It's a little steamy.
Yeah. Very steamy.
Oh, my.
Anyway, thanks for the email, Eric. It's questions@dudesonhockey.com. For those of you wanting to write in and ask us something or
please
to
do.
Comment. Dude, the final bit of news is the R&D camp, which is the NHL sort of looking at new rules changes. So
okay.
I have sort of a list here from TSN. Let me just go over them really quick, and then we can sort of pull out the ones that we think are interesting or not. Having three face-off dots, one in each zone down the center of the rink. So I didn't understand this at the beginning, but I think three and only three. So not like the two on either side of the
right.
goal. So there's only three face-off dots anywhere.
Right.
Okay. Using a variation of the face-off where the whistle starts to play rather than the traditional puck drop. So they put the puck on the dot, and then they blow the whistle and the teams joust for it without dropping it. If a player is deemed to have committed a faceoff violation, he will be required to move back behind a penalty line further away from the dot. Trying both no-touch icing and a hybrid icing where there's the ability for the whistle to for the official to whistle a play icing before anybody touches it. Having a second referee located off the playing surface.
What?
What? Yeah. Not allowing a team to change line after it commits an offside. In OT, having 3 minutes of 4-on-4, then 3 minutes of 3-on-3, and then 3 minutes of 2-on-2. Having 5 players participate in the shootout, and a bunch of stuff about that. Nobody cares. Narrowing the shallowness of the net by 4 inches to create more ice behind the net. Increasing the size of the crease. Of this list, dude, like, which ones do you think are interesting, weird, stupid, or, you know...
I saw a picture of the giant face-off dot in the middle of center ice. It looked like, have you ever seen that Mel Gibson movie, Signs, with like the giant crop circles?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what it looked like, minus the racism.
Right,
right. It was a very strange... I don't know. I then you're like attacking right up the gut.
Yeah.
And is this Mike Singletary Niners football? Don't change that. That's stupid, dude.
Okay. Anything else that strikes your fancy?
If you get kicked out of the penalty, out of the faceoff dot, you have to stand like a foot. Do you have to foot behind? Do you have to write your name on the board too? Yeah,
I think.
How's
so.
That? The whole thing about that is it slows the game down. Now that's just gonna. How's that gonna solve anything?
Yeah.
I,
one thing that wasn't mentioned is I heard that, and I don't know if it's actually being tested out, but somebody said like, oh, well, if someone gets kicked out of the faceoff dot, the other team gets to choose who takes the next faceoff.
Now, I would kind of like that, that one, but that also would, I mean...
Then all your defense...
Joe Thornton gets kicked out, and then, you know, Ryan Getzlaf standing there going,
you know, I'll take you, Jay Leach.
No, I want to... You know, I mean, yeah. I just see,
yeah, yeah.
You know, that being kind of ridiculous.
That seems like a novelty.
2-on-2 overtime hockey is so stupid.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
dumb.
You
dude.
Know, are we turning into an arcade game? I don't even understand the second referee off the ice.
Yeah, what's he gonna do? Like stand on top of the glass?
We're like, hey, hey, wait!
Yeah,
you missed something.
He's like the Philly fanatic, yeah, like standing on top of the dugout. Yeah. Ha cha cha.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
The jousting instead of the dropping of the puck.
I don't like that either.
That's rugby, right? I
yeah.
mean, so what's
it's
the
like
difference?
A scrum, basically.
What about this hybrid icing? Can you explain to me what this... Is this just no-touch icing, dude?
It's sometimes no-touch and other times not, basically. That's what the hybrid is. Is that
so is that ref's discretion?
Yes, it's ref's discretion. If he thinks that the defense will clearly get there first, he'll blow the play dead before he touches it. But if there's a race... or he thinks the offensive player can get to it first, then he won't blow it and he'll let the offensive player get to it. So I don't really mind that as much. I mean, the point is that...
Aren't we going to have like disputes over, you shouldn't have blown it, I was going to get there.
Of course,
you know?
Of course, but there's disputes now. I mean, there's times where they blow icing that that I didn't think was icing because I thought, you know, a player touched it or could have touched it. And, you know, that whole standard is very subjective as well. I mean, to me, why, you know,
isn't the point, see, I would think the point of changing the icing rule would be to prevent those sort of lethal collisions. And that's not going to prevent anything. I mean, if it's
right.
close, they're still going to be go hammering into the boards and we're going to see another Torrey Mitchell, Curtis Foster moment.
Right.
You know,
right.
Where these guys are going in hard. They're trying to make a play. And I don't know if they're going to do it. It should just be no touch, period.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. You know, I don't the number of times you see an icing call turn into a quote unquote exciting play is pretty pretty rare.
Yeah. I miss hockey so much right now. I would take an icing call. I even thought about watching an old Stanley Cup playoff game on the NHL Network the other day.
Yeah, I've gone past it and lingered a few seconds. I can't think none of these, dude. I'm really excited about. Overtime 4-on-4 followed by 3-on-3, I guess, would be all right. But still, it's yet another situation that is never going to be replicated in the playoffs. So it's like, you know, 4-on-4 followed by 3-on-3 followed by every player has to hold their stick the opposite way. You know, I mean, you know, followed by the goalies joust for it at center ice. You know, followed by what, you know, it's
like, I think it should come down to a fist fight between the coaches.
Yeah.
At the end.
Right. Right. But they have to wear those huge sumo suits that inflate. It's like,
and
what?
That's how you decide the extra point.
I mean, it's just another random thing to put into the rules that doesn't really, you know, it's something that teams are going to have to prepare for, yet doesn't really have any bearing in the
playoffs. Never liked that rule change. I miss the tie.
I'm one of those dumb guys that likes that doesn't mind the ties so much, especially since some games are 3 points and some games are two. So R&D camp, I don't see anything here that I am very excited about at all.
What a bummer.
It is kind of a bummer. Oh, well. Speaking of bummers, dude, our Tottenham team that we just picked up, I'm not talking about the EPL for very long, so don't run away. Not going so good. Not going so good for us.
No,
so,
it's going okay.
I hope some other people out there listening are on our bandwagon with Tottenham Hotspur in the English Premier League. But yeah, they were supposed to face a team called the Young Boys, which is
They did. They played Young Boys.
It was extremely amusing just to see that on the screen. But they were supposed to crush them, and then they give up 3 goals in the first 25 minutes of the game.
They came back. It was 3-2, and it's aggregate, so, you know, if they win the next game 2-0, they move on, dude. Yeah. Don't panic. Those Young Boys don't have our number yet.
Enough. Okay, we had to get one Young Boys joke in there.
Of course.
Dude, is there anything else? Anything else here?
Well, you know, I mean, one thing I was going to mention, how are we doing on time?
Yeah, we should get out of here.
It's a little long.
Yeah, it's a little
long.
Okay. Let's get out of here.
Save it.
Because, I mean, we're not going to have that much to talk about next week anyway.
What are you talking about? The Sharks will have signed Niemi and Willie Mitchell by that point.
Of course.
And traded for Robin McGeer.
Well, if you want us to talk about anything next week, send us an email.
Otherwise, please.
Yes, please do. Otherwise, we will be back, and you will hear us again next week, same time, same place.
Later, dude.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.